Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Police, Courts, and Fire. And the headline reads, Not Guilty Plea for County Chair. Piatt County Board Chairman Ray Spencer pled not guilty to charges of forgery and official misconduct in a court appearance February 11th in Monticello. Spencer faces two charges each of official misconduct and forgery, both Class 3 felonies, all of which came out of a grand jury in January. He is accused of altering an email from Piatt County State's Attorney Dana Rhodes and causing it to be delivered to a news media outlet in an altered condition, according to the indictment. Spencer is also accused of attempting to secure legal advice for the Piatt County Board without the permission of Rhodes, a violation of state law. During his arraignment on February 11th, Spencer also requested a jury trial, but a date was not set. Instead, a status hearing was scheduled for March 17th at 1:30 p.m. in the Piatt County Courthouse. The next jury trial session would be in April, with another one following in July. Judge Carl Koritz presided over the arraignment. He had been assigned after three Sixth Circuit judges, Jeremy Ritchie, Hugh Fenson, and Gary Weber, recused themselves from hearing proceedings on the case. Next from the front page is this article under the banner of Piatt County. The headline reads, Board Member Calls for Change of Leadership. For the first time since a grand jury indicted Piatt County Board Chairman Ray Spencer on forgery and official misconduct charges on January 13th, the idea of removing him as chair has come up at a public board session. Board member Randy Schumart did not officially call for Spencer's removal at the February 12th board session, but did comment, quote, It's getting to one of those points where I think the lack of leadership has got to get changed and get changed soon, end quote. Speaking during the committee report portion near the end of the meeting, he claimed there were issues with county board correspondence being copied to the state's attorney's office, something he claimed had been an issue for about 6 months. I think we need to start looking into some of our legalities and things and the way they are being operated. And right now, at this point, we have no room for any more problems with the county board, added Schumard. His comments came after Assistant State's Attorney Elizabeth Dobson clarified during public comment that a board chairman can be removed by the vote of five of the six board members at a special meeting. The chair would still be an elected county board member. Two county board representatives can call a special board session. Do you think, county board members, that you do not have the authority to remove a chairperson, said Dobson. The law indicates you could have a special meeting, five out of the six voting in favor of removing a person from chair status, puts the chair as the status of a county board member. She said her comments came in part due to inquiries via social media. There have been so many comments on Facebook that demand for or inquire as to what can be done to have the chairman removed, Dobson said after the county board meeting. There have also been several comments made to me personally about why the board won't move to act if the chairman has not opted to resign. Dobson added that while the board cannot currently remove an elected member from office, it can amend its bylaws to include a provision for administrative leave or hold its own version of a trial under Robert's Rules of Order. As for the trial process, she added that it is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard and it is held before the board. One of the charges against Spencer revolves around him reportedly attempting to hire an outside attorney without the permission of State's Attorney Dana Rhodes, who is by law the chief legal counsel for the county. It could have stemmed from an apparent rift between Spencer and the State's Attorney's office that appeared through the contentious budget process last October and November. Dobson said it has led to little communication between the office and the chairman, but that the state's attorney's office has continued to provide advice and continued to solicit contact and input on legal issues. The fact that there is a communication barrier has nothing to do with this office. Spencer did not comment on the issue at the county board meeting and declined to comment after it. This is under the heading of public comment agenda placement. The allowing of public comment earlier in meetings was mentioned by board member Dale Latz. Public speakers have asked to be able to address the board before issues are considered during the action item portion of the agenda. An example of that came last week when the board considered a resolution to declare Piatt County a Second Amendment sanctuary county. Latz pointed out there were several in the audience who wished to speak on the issue before a vote was taken. This is a good example of the idea of having comments before you get into business, said Latz. This resolution says we're talking about the people of Piatt County. I think there are people on both sides that want to discuss this, and we're voting on something before we get that input, he added. The current agenda order is spelled out in the county board bylaws, but Dobson said the chairman and or the county board has the flexibility to change it meeting by meeting. Board members voted down the resolution, but then left a crack open for future consideration by tabling it. And now turning to page A2 under the banner of Farm Credit Illinois, we have this article headlined, Monticello Man, New Farm Credit President. Aaron Johnson of Monticello, the new Farm Credit Illinois president and CEO, is poised to help oversee a building expansion this year to add about 20,000 square feet and several new jobs at the company's headquarters here at 1100 Farm Credit Drive. We need more room. We're out of space, he said. Several new staff positions will be added at the site, where about 21 have been added in the last 2 years and 4 to 5 are opening up this year. This isn't only our central office location, but it's also our largest retail office, Johnson noted. Right now, FCI employs more than 100 people in Mahomet and has a total of about 231 employees. Our association is the southern 60 counties of Illinois, so that's the territory that we serve, Johnson said. We have over 8,500 farm families that we work with. FCI is a cooperative owned by its members, he explained, that makes loans to agriculture-related entities such as farmers naturally and sells crop insurance. Those are really the two areas that we're chartered to do, he said. We make loans for farmland, mostly, and then operating loans and machinery loans for farm operators. We have some loans to investors for real estate, and then we loan money to farmers for everything agricultural. On the crop insurance side, FCI is not an agency and doesn't own any crop insurance business, Johnson noted. But we are an agent for a number of companies who sell crop insurance, and then we sell and service the products in the marketplace, he said. The business has been centered in the Champaign area since its start, and headquartered in Mahomet since 2008. The Mahomet area is a good area to attract top employees because they need the good school systems and good access to airports and facilities, so it really does meet our needs as a central office location, Johnson said. Johnson's father operated a small farm, so he comes from an agricultural background, but his calling has been related to farm finances. Johnson was named FCI president and CEO on December 18th by the cooperative's board of directors. He had served in the post on an interim basis since September 25th when former CEO Tom Tracy died unexpectedly. Aaron is an experienced executive and visionary leader whose understanding of this organization is only surpassed by his passion for both farm family members and FCI employees, FCI Board Chair Eric Mosby said in a press release December 18th. He has provided steady and seamless leadership these past months, and the board is confident he will lead the cooperative brilliantly in helping farm families succeed for the coming years. With nearly 35 years of Farm Credit and banking career experience, Johnson first joined the Farm Credit system in 1985, following a successful lending and field management career based in Farm Credit's Pontiac and Decatur offices. He joined the association's senior management team in 2002 and was named executive vice president in 2014. Johnson is a native of New Holland and earned an organizational business management degree from Illinois State University after attending Lincoln Land Community College. He serves on the Farm Credit Foundation's Trust Committee, which provides fiduciary oversight of the human resources collaboration, serving more than 8,900 Farm Credit employees in 30 states. Johnson and his wife Debbie reside in Monticello and have 3 children and 3 grandchildren. Our purpose and mission is to help farm families succeed, and that's what we do every day. We work hard every day to create better lives and help the farmers in the region succeed, Johnson said of the FCI mission. After his decades in agriculture, he has a feel for challenges facing producers in 2020. I think the biggest change for our farmers today and the way we do business is the volatility in agriculture, Johnson said. Mother Nature always has been a major factor in agriculture, of course, but he said there are other constantly looming challenges to deal with currently as well. Now you've got everything from big price swings to the tariffs to just things that are outside of our control here in agriculture that we have to deal with, Johnson said. The volatility in the markets is so much different than it used to be. Even with the technology increase and the yield increases that have been brought on, it's still more difficult today to be a farmer than it was, he added, compared to the 1980s when he started his career, because you have to manage the risk and volatility. To that end, FCI has programs specifically to assist young farmers, he said. It's tough to be a young farmer today, he said. Our job is to make sure that agriculture, from top to bottom, has the capital they need to produce the food for the world, Johnson said. It's a pretty daunting challenge to think about, but it's all we do. That's why we're so focused. The better you can focus and do one thing, the better you can be at it. Asked about his own recipe for success, Johnson praises FCI and the culture of the company. One of my responsibilities is to make this a great place for the employees to be so that they can take care of the members, he said. As a cooperative, it's not about stock price. It's about member satisfaction and experience. It makes it a fun job as CEO, he added. For Johnson, it's all about growing roots in agriculture in many ways. We do have a number of employees here who do farm today, besides working here, Johnson said. It's in our blood. Our next article today is under the banner of Business, and the headline reads, Chamber, Main Street, now share a director. A fluke in timing is allowing the Monticello Chamber and Main Street organizations to enter into an era of increased cooperation. The two organizations have decided to share one full-time director instead of each supporting their own part-time employees, an arrangement that had gone back decades. The move was made possible when both part-time directors, Stephanie McLeese for Main Street Monticello and Denise Flahr for the Monticello Chamber of Commerce and Tourism, left their posts in December. The two organizations decided to take the opportunity to combine forces and share one full-time director, that being the recent hire of Monticello native Shelley Crawford Stock. Each will retain their own board of directors and unique focus on business development, but Chamber Board President Jim Singleton said there is enough overlap to make the combined director a benefit to all. The two entities should work together for the betterment of Monticello, for the businesses, for the members, and should have the same end goals in mind, which is supporting the businesses here in town first and foremost, said Singleton. Samantha Kuhn, the current president of the Main Street Board, likes that the decision came on their own terms and not due to a crisis for either group. It's not that one of us is struggling and the other is going to come in and save the day. It's that both organizations are doing some great work, and we think this is just a way for us to extend capacity by merging some of the administrative responsibilities so that the boards can focus on the more strategic opportunities, said Kuhn, who owns several businesses, including the Zibel House in Monticello. I think the reason this works right now is that both organizations enter into the partnership in a position of strength, she added. Crawford Stock is a Monticello High School graduate who went on to earn her degree in insurance from Illinois State University, then owned a local insurance business before selling her shares in 2018. She is thrilled to help usher in a new era of shared responsibility for the Chamber and Main Street. I'm excited to shine a spotlight on the hometown I love and on the business community that I respect, said Crawford Stock, who has volunteered for both groups. I am thrilled to be a part of making the organizations responsible for promoting Monticello more effective with better cooperation and increased communication. Ultimately, it's an honor to be trusted to help preserve our historical charm and modernize our approach to business support. Despite the collaboration, both organizations stress they are still separate groups. Each organization will maintain its status as a separate entity with its own leadership structure, benefit to their members and partners, and annual roster of events, noted a joint press release from Main Street and the Chamber. Singleton said Crawford Stock's resume fits the role, and she has been both a Chamber board member and a volunteer for Main Street events. She understands how things work and what it takes to volunteer for those events and behind-the-scenes organizational things that have to be taken care of, he said. There is a crossover that could make things more efficient and maybe do some things that neither organization could do apart because they didn't have the resources. This is a rare opportunity for us to think strategically about what our organizations need at this moment in time. The timing was right for us, added Kuhn. Crawford Stock officially started as the joint director on February 3rd. She will keep just one office, that being in the Wabash Depot near the downtown business district. Office hours are Monday through Thursdays from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Fridays from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. The office can be reached at 217-762-7921. Again, it's 217-762-7921. Our next article is under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, Multiplier Set at 1.0000. Piatt County has been issued a final property assessment equalization factor of 1. According to David Harris, Director of Illinois Department of Revenue. The Property Assessment Equalization Factor, often called the multiplier, is the method used to achieve uniform property assessments among counties as required by law. This equalization is particularly important because of the state's 6,600 local taxing districts overlap into two or more counties, i.e., school districts, junior college districts, fire protection districts. If there were no equalization among counties, substantial inequities among taxpayers with comparable properties would result. Under a law passed in 1975, property in Illinois should be assessed at one-third of its market value. Farm property is assessed differently, with farm home sites and dwellings subject to regular assessing and equalization procedures, but with farmland assessed at one-third of its agriculture economic value. Farmland is not subject to the state equalization factor. Assessments in Piatt County are at 32.91% of market value based on sales of properties in 2016, 2017, and 2018. The equalization factor currently being assigned is for 2019 taxes payable in 2020. Last year's equalization factor for the county was 1. The final assessment equalization factor was issued after a public hearing on the tentative factor. The tentative factor issued in November 2019 was 1. The equalization factor is determined annually for each county by comparing the price of individual properties sold over the past 3 years to the assessed value placed on those properties by the county supervisor of assessments / county assessor. If this 3-year average level of assessment is 1/3 of the market value, the equalization factor will be 1. If the average level of assessment is greater than 1/3 of market value, the equalization factor will be less than 1. And if the average level of assessment is less than 1/3 of market value, the equalization factor will be greater than 1. Tax bills are determined by local taxing bodies when they request money each year to provide services to local citizens. And now, turning to page A5, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Donna C. Alexander, 81, of Monticello, Illinois, passed away February 3, 2020, at 9:44 p.m. at the Piatt County Nursing Home, surrounded by family. Funeral services were held at 12 o'clock p.m. Saturday, February 8, 2020, at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Visitation was held prior to the funeral from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home. Interment was in Monticello Township Cemetery. Precious Mother Helen L. Thomas ascended to her heavenly home to join her Savior Jesus Christ. Many family and friends anxiously awaited her. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. Sunday, February 9, 2020, at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Visitation was before the funeral from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. Sunday at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home. Interment was in Beaumont Township Cemetery. Arlene Rittenhouse, 88, of Monticello, Illinois, passed away at 1:55 p.m. on Saturday, February 8, 2020, at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello, Illinois. A graveside service is planned for later in the spring, when her cremated remains will be interred beside her parents at the Beaumont Township Cemetery. And now, returning to the news and views, on page A3 we have this article. It's under the banner of City of Monticello. The headline reads, Council Denies Amendment to Housing Unit. Concerns regarding safety, parking, and proper use of a parcel of land helped win over the Monticello City Council on February 10th, as it voted 5-2 to deny zoning amendments for a 46-unit apartment complex proposed for the current site of Monticello Bowl. 4 people addressed the council during public participation regarding the proposal for 1412 North Market Street. Some, like Lynn's pharmacy owner Lynn McConnell, said he was not against the apartments if done correctly, but felt the lack of a sidewalk along a state highway was an issue, especially residents who would need to cross 105 to access Forest Preserve Park. I just do not believe right now that, unless you're willing to put in a sidewalk or have a crossing across the road, that there will not be problems. I've watched problems there, he said. Andrew Robinson, a property owner near the MVAH proposal, was concerned the development would not only look totally out of place, but that the 3-story structure would be too large for the lot and hard for local firefighting equipment to reach due to its height. Steve Schreffler proposed the Pepson Hill site as a better location for apartments. MVAH received a conditional use permit for the project a year ago, in addition to a variance to allow 58 parking places, less than the 92 required by city zoning code. But those zoning measures were for a senior citizens only complex. MVAH asked for the age restriction to be lifted in order to have a better chance at receiving state funding to help with construction costs. Company spokesman Hugh Mann on noted that a professional parking study showed the peak need for parking would be 46 spots, and said the firm was considering a cap of one vehicle per bedroom rented, which would total 57. With 35 of the 46 units being one bedroom, Ahn also felt it would keep the number of children to a minimum. This being a 25 one-bedroom units, we don't anticipate any children in those 35 one-bedroom units. In the 11 two-bedroom units, we expect a combination of senior households, roommate situations with adults, and then families with a child or two, he told the city council. So we anticipate 5 to 11 children in this entire building. We're looking at adding one or two children per school building, he added. Ahn also said a fenced-in play area had been added to the plans that does address having a play place for children, he said. While agreeing with some of the safety concerns, Alderman John Frericks noted the income cap for renters was not the same as having poverty-laden tenants. At 80% of median income of the area, a family could earn $56,000 annually and still rent there. If set at 60%, it would be around a $35,000 per year cap. But safety does bring a big concern for me, said Frericks. This is a sign to look at our areas that lack sidewalks. He noted it would be about a half-mile run to get a sidewalk connected to an existing one into the south. It doesn't seem to be a great spot for housing, added council member Mike Kuhn, noting the area has commercial and industrial-type businesses. Council members eventually voted against amending the permit in order to lift the age restriction for the income-capped housing. Voting yes were Tom Reed and Rodney Burris. MVAH's permit and variance for senior-only housing is still in effect if the firm wishes to pursue it. And under the heading of Fire Chief, the new Monticello Fire and Rescue Chief, John Rupke, presented the January Fire Department report to the council, something he plans to do monthly. I want to say thank you to Chief Rick Dubson for 39 years of service that he provided, Rupke said of his retired predecessor. The January report included 33 calls, 23 of them medical ones. There was a structure fire at 404 Oglesby Street that caused about $60,000 damage on July 26th. Firefighters also responded to a fatal accident on January 11th on Highway 105 between Monticello and Bement. Rupke also addressed a firefighter shortage in the all-volunteer department. We are supposed to be staffed with 20. We're down to 14, he told Alderman. Whatever you guys can do to help us with our recruiting process, we really could use some members. He told the council that the department trains the first three Thursdays of each month. Finally for today, under the briefs section, we have this article headlined, Atwood Man Gets 26 Years. An Atwood man was sentenced February 11th to 26 years in federal prison for sexually exploiting teen girls. Dennis H. West, 44, has been in custody since he was arrested in March 2019. In September, he pleaded guilty to 5 counts of sexual exploitation of minors in 2017 and 18, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Prosecutors said he began grooming the girls while they were in junior high school and paid them to engage in sex acts. They also said West paid the girls to send pictures to him of sexually explicit conduct. He had been arrested in December 2018 on state charges, which were dropped when federal prosecutors took over. The charges were investigated by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, and the police departments of Atwood, Tuscola, Arthur, and Decatur in coordination with the Piatt and Douglas County State's Attorney's Offices. The case was prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson. This has been the Piatt County Journal-Republican, dated Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.